then logically presented to the Washington Interreligious Staff Council, the representatives of the 54 major religious denominations, this issue, I was functioning very much within the context of the assignment that I was given at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was contacted in 1994 by Dr. John Mack and asked to represent him in front of the Harvard Faculty Committee, once again, as a practicing attorney, I had been contacted and asked to participate in that type of activity. When I was working most recently with the Gorbachev Foundation, working on this strategic initiative to identify a new paradigm, it just became perfectly clear that one of the most important defining qualities of a genuinely new paradigm or a new worldview here at the end of the Cold War would include having to start to get our human family adjusted to the fact that we are probably not at the very apex of all biological evolution in the universe, that it's a key quality of a genuinely new paradigm. And so when I began to talk about that and discuss that particular issue, as you know, this particular issue is kind of like a lightning rod. The minute you start talking about that, people say, well, if you're talking about extraterrestrial intelligence, you're obviously talking about UFOs as well. You're talking about alien abductions. You're talking about the entire debate going on with regard to how many of these things are real and whether the military intelligence is involved or not. And so I began to be contacted by groups like MUFON and by the International Congress on UFOs, et cetera, and asked to come and make presentations to those large groups, which I did when specifically asked to do so. So I've never been afraid of dealing with issues when, in fact, I've been asked to address them, because if people have asked you to address them, then generally they'll listen. So I don't like to try to, you know, force myself upon any group or any citizens group. If they know enough to ask the right questions, then they're going to be giving adequate attention to the answer. So that's what's happened here. I gave these addresses to the UFO Congress. I gave the address to the MUFON group. And then I got contacted by the Art Bell Show and then by some others. And most recently, as you know, the Jeff Rentz Show. And that's, as I understand it, that's where you, Errol, heard about it.
Picked up on
it.
Said,
look, why don't we have him on the show? So I said, here I am.
Mm-hmm. Now, was there one particular incident in the course of your research on the UFO side of things, and you weren't doing it publicly back then, that made you sit up and go, uh-oh, there is something to this?
Well, yes. When back in 1977, when I was asked to participate as a special consultant to the Library of Congress research group analysis for President Carter, I was given access to the Project Blue Book files, the classified sections of them, during the preparation for a seminar, which I was asked to present to the top 50 scientists at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in California in the SETI program. And in that context, I was allowed to review the classified sections of the Blue Book project. And in that section, I came across absolutely clear pictures, photographs of a UFO that was on the ground. It had apparently crashed. It was stuck in the side of an embankment. There was snow all around in the photographs, and there were United States Air Force personnel in the photographs measuring this particular craft, taking photographs of it. You could see them in the number of these photographs, and then there were actually close-up photos from different perspectives of the vehicle, and they actually had insignia on the side of the vehicle that they had taken some close-up pictures of. And so, I mean, when I saw this in the context where I'd been allowed into this room downstairs in the new building of the Library of Congress, it hadn't even been opened yet. This was a brand new building. They had a big special room downstairs. There were Air Force guards at the doors. When I actually saw these photographs in the files, I said, well, look, now that I've seen this, and I know that the United States Air Force has these photographs, that they've got this vehicle, they've obviously got it, here are the photographs, and therefore I felt compelled to communicate this information to the major religious organizations, national offices with whom I was working, in trying to get the major religious denominations to work together to try to formulate some type of a response to this, some type of a position where they could get out front of this thing and start to address this to the American people, but nobody wanted to do it at that point. So that was kind of a Rubicon, where I crossed that Rubicon and realized that this type of data that was inside the files of Blue Book was adequate to convince me that all of the speculation and the kind of discussions that people were engaged in were extremely well-founded. So it went well beyond just my own intuition that this was true.
Mm-hmm. Dan, Mike Woods here. One of the things that frequent criticisms of ufology in general is that there's no scientific evidence, that the scientific proof isn't there. Mm-hmm. Well, there's many types of proof, there's many definitions of fact, and there's many types of evidence. From someone with a legal education and background, did you see sufficient evidence?
Well, that's what I've raised with the people at MUFON and with the UFO Congress. What I said is I think that at the present time there's adequate information here on the basis of which a special kind of Rule 11 investigation should be conducted. Rule 11 is a special provision of the United States Civil Code of Procedure pursuant to which a practicing attorney who's a member of the Bar Association, prior to the time that they're willing to file any particular federal civil lawsuit making a claim of a cause of action against any government agency or any civil corporation or civil defendant, they're obliged to undertake a good faith examination of the evidence that is available on the basis of which they are either going to come to a conclusion in the positive or negative as to whether or not there's a good faith reason to believe that a cause of action exists. So what I said is that predicated upon the various types of speculations and allegations that are afield in this particular issue area, there is a clear hypothesis that is being discussed among the citizenry in which they fear, or we fear, that in fact the United States government executive branches have somehow come into possession of a crashed or downed saucer of some sort,
Dan,
and are engaging in back engineering it.
Okay. Daniel Sheehan is our guest. He shot to prominence as a very young man. He got involved with the Watergate scandal as a lawyer. Want to say a quick good evening to Henry here. Henry, good evening. Welcome to Strange Days Indeed.
How you doing, guys?
Good, thank you, and all the better for having you along. You got something for Dan?
The point is, you know, people say, you know, why haven't there been a lot of UFO crashes? Well, NASA's only had, you know, like the shuttle blow up and something in Apollo. Remember when that spaceship
fire?
Apollo
13.
Yeah.
Apollo 13, yeah.
I mean, you know, that kind of criticism just shows that we underestimate advanced technology. You know, we have a lot of airline crashes, but NASA is like two cuts above that, if you follow me.
Yeah, and their score hasn't been too good lately, has it?
Well, and the other side of that, to support Henry altogether here, is we're just facing up to the tragedy of the Concorde crash. Let's remember that that's a supersonic liner that has flown literally tens of thousands of flights with one crash.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so.
Henry, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Good thought.
Good night, Henry. Dan, we were talking in the break that...
Yeah, I'd like to thank you for clearing my sinuses. After that, I saw photographs of a disc embedded in a hillside with snow, et cetera, et cetera. That was good for a couple of laps around the desk in here.
But still, UFOs are no threat to the United States security, yes?
Well, that's of course, an extraordinarily interesting question, because if, in fact, I'm trying to approach this from the point of view of a practicing attorney,
mm-hmm.
a trial lawyer that does major public impact litigation throughout 30 years, what I am being told now by representatives of the public interest community involved in this exploration of the question of extraterrestrial intelligence mm-hmm. and the UFO phenomena, they're suggesting that they believe that the United States has recovered such a craft. I'm sure they have because of my own direct seeing of these photographs. And the concern is that the United States executive branch, the military intelligence community, has undertaken a project to back engineer this particular craft and to attempt to develop some type of offensive weapon system based upon an understanding of the technology pursuant to which these craft work, an offensive military weapon system of some sort pursuant to which they could pursue an offensive military strategy to shoot these vehicles down.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if in fact such a program is underway, and our United States Congressional Intelligence Committees have not been informed about this and have not participated in authorizing such a project, then what we're dealing with is a situation very similar to that which obtained back in 1984 when the Reagan and Bush administrations began to pursue a completely unauthorized military operation against the Nicaraguan government.
Right.
Now, having been the attorney that litigated that and established contact with the FBI and turned in Oliver North and all of those folks and began to get Bill Webster, the head of the FBI, to conduct a special investigation, forced the special prosecutor into position of Lawrence Walsh, and met with people all throughout the Congress and in various government agencies to get this done. I'm aware in great detail about what the constitutional implications, or more accurately, the unconstitutional implications are of such a program. So what I said is that if, in fact, the public interest community and the citizenry of both of our countries are interested in wanting to pursue that question as to whether or not that's true, that a really responsible, professional investigation needs to be undertaken from the perspective of ascertaining whether or not there is credible, admissible evidence to put into a court of law to bring that question before a legal forum. So that's the question that I began to raise before the MUFON conference and the UFO Congress, that I raised on the Art Bell Show and others, and people now have come back with a proposal.
Mm-hmm.
They've said, look, what if we were willing to send in to the Art Bell Show, that Mike Siegel ran there, they said, what if we were willing to send in $1 each to a fund, to fund the holding of such a major tribunal, a major investigation under Rule 11 of the United States Civil Code, to actually conduct a professional investigation where both sides of the issue were represented by professional legal counsel, all of the evidence was tendered to a tribunal that was run by a three-judge panel, where a real live jury selected from the federal jury pool was in fact impaneled. This was all allowed to be carried on national television and national radio so that there was live telecast of this entire tribunal. And when the jury began to debate this, the 12 people that actually went into the jury room, that there were live cameras in the jury room to follow the debate and the discussion among 12 regular citizens. And if, in fact, those 12 citizens came to the conclusion that there was more probability than not that, in fact, there was such a downed craft and there is such an ultra-secret covert program underway now to attempt to develop a military weapon system to launch an offensive strike against these vehicles in this civilization, then, in fact, there would be grounds for bringing a major federal litigation backed by the power of all of the public interest communities in both of our countries to bring this question to a judicial tribunal. That's the issue that's being discussed right now. And I've been asked to be willing to have our Christic Institute place its entire reputation upon the line to present the affirmative evidence in support of that thesis at such a Rule 11 proceeding. And we've indicated I've presented the question to our board of directors. The premier radio network, where the Art Bell and the Mike Siegel show is on, has in fact given the green light to that program.
Uh-huh.
And they are considering now establishing contact with other people, such as your guys, in your radio station, to see whether they want to participate in such a project.
Mm-hmm.
So that this is not the possession of some exclusive radio show or radio network or one particular UFO group as opposed to another,
mm-hmm.
but to have the entire public interest community of both of our countries come together to support such a common project.
Well, we would certainly be very willing to go along with that one, Daniel Sheehan. Dan, we got to take a break here.
Daniel, if you conduct a Rule 11 investigation, is there any mechanism in place within that structure to provide or consider getting a waiver for security oaths for military and past military personnel?
Well, actually, it would be, functionally, it would provide an extraordinarily significant safeguard for the people. For example, if we succeed in having the tribunal conducted in the way we intend to, there would be three federal judges that are actual sitting federal judges that are brought to sit on the tribunal. We would probably get people on a senior status, that people like Judge Bob Marriage from the Eastern District of Virginia, or Jack Tice out of Oklahoma, or, you know, fellows like that, that have, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of trials that they have supervised, mm-hmm. that they would sit as a three-judge tribunal governing this whole process. And if we also get CNN or the major radio networks to broadcast this live, there'll be 100 million people, at least probably, who listen to this and watch this, maybe more. And if, in fact, for example, a major brigadier general from the United States Air Force were to appear and be sworn under oath, as will be done in the tribunal, and provide detailed information about an experience that he had where he saw the files, or he saw one of these UFOs, or saw some particular base where actual ETs were working with U.S. military operations or something of that nature, mm-hmm. anyone who were to try to undertake to prosecute him for allegedly violating some national security oath would then have to cope with the massive public reaction to that type of activity. Plus, we would assure those people of legal representation. We would then have part of the fund that is gathered through the contributions from the radio listeners to be put aside to actually defend those people. And then there would be another access to a major tribunal, a public tribunal in real life, as it were, where those people would be defended. And we would make the argument there of a necessity defense. We would defend those people on the grounds that this was such an extraordinary piece of information that the citizens of our world had a right to know that that person was, in fact, exonerated from any criminal liability for having communicated that information.
Yeah, that would take care of a lot of people's concerns about
yeah.
their secrecy oaths.
Yeah, and it would be, in a sense, more effective than simply having, you know, someone say, oh, we assure you, you won't be prosecuted, because it isn't just the criminal prosecution that those people are concerned about. It's some kind of covert activity being undertaken to neutralize them or to destroy their reputation, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if they're brought on in a very credible way in front of a federal tribunal and they actually present their responsible information in a completely credible way, then they're going to be so well known and so popular among the people
mm-hmm.
that I doubt very seriously whether any government agency would dare not only to try to prosecute them, but to try to undertake any type of other activity.
What are your chances of getting, say, somebody, you know, a network like CNN, or what's the congressional TV channel or the Senate TV
C-SPAN.
Channel? C-SPAN.
Well, we'll have to see. Every one of these major cases, such as the Karen Silkwood case or Three Mile Island or any of the other cases that we've done, when we first began those cases, nobody knew anything about them.
Mm-hmm.
But given the public education, the grassroots organizing, and the other activities that go on around the preparation of a case like that, the odds are extremely high that there would be a major interest on the part of CNN or C-SPAN to telecast this, because technically it wouldn't be being held in a real regular federal court to start with, so they wouldn't be able to ban the cameras from being there. What we're actually talking about doing is establishing a full-scale set, a movie set, just exactly like a major federal courtroom, except that it will be equipped with television cameras, highly technical television cameras all throughout the courtroom, very small and unobtrusive, mm-hmm. so that we'll be able to get probably a 16-camera shoot for the entire trial, close-ups of the jury as they're of watching and listening to this, close-ups of the witnesses, close-ups of the people that are observing in the courtroom, and, very importantly, we'll have the same kind of mini cameras in the jury room while the discussion is going on.
I like this. Strange days, Michael J. Woods.
Indeed, Errol Bruce Knapp.
On the line with us from Las Vegas is renowned lawyer and now seemingly a UFO activist, Daniel Sheehan. And let's just bring Alex in here. Alex, good evening. Welcome to Strange Days Indeed on CFRB 1010.
Yeah, hi, good evening. I got a couple of points to make here. I think that your guest's intentions are really good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little biased because he is a trial lawyer, and this seems like it's going to be a boon for lawyers. But I think that it's incredibly naive to think that this is not all going to fall under the rubric of national security. When it comes to congressional oversight and stuff like that, I would not trust a congressman or congresswoman or a member of parliament or their aides with this kind of information. Certainly the president doesn't know about it. It's in the hands of high-up military officers. And if you have this supposed brigadier general go and testify, chances are he's going to perjure himself and say he knows nothing. These people, honor is not just a word to them, and they take these oaths quite seriously and quite literally. Now, are there ETIs amongst us? I believe that there is. I believe that there's more than one race. I think we're in contact with some, basically the U.S. government and other major governments, and some we're not in contact with. And I think one of the reasons they're hiding it, or a couple of reasons, one is organized religion. He was talking about going to the churches. Well, it would be against their better interests, because up in the hierarchy of these religions, all of them, they're businesses. And whereas I can reconcile religion and ETI, because I believe there's just one God, and if he can create us, he can create anything he wants.
Mm-hmm.
I can see it that way. However, can you imagine if you're high up in the Catholic Church, and you've got people leaving the church, and you're trying to get money coming in because you're running a business, and all of a sudden, extraterrestrial intelligence is proved. What's that going to do to people's faith?
Hang on here, Alex. Danny?
Yeah.
As founder and honcho of the Christic Institute, how do you feel about that?
Well, in fact, the seminar that I gave to the top 50 scientists at SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence at JPL, was dealing with this very issue, the issue of the theological implications of the quest for extraterrestrial intelligence. And, you know, with all due respect, Alex, having spent many years inside the Jesuit orders, national headquarters, the people in the much more sophisticated, the fact of the matter is Catholic Christian tradition, for example, sophisticated in their understanding of experience, relationship between mystical experience and social structures and ethical value systems, etc.
Are they willing to share that, though, with us, the great unwashed lumpen masses?
Well, yes. The fact of the matter is that the efficacy of communicating ethical normative standards into the major mass-based population has been one of the major objectives of these religious organizations for eons. And the fact of the matter is you have a situation where something like 87% of the people on our planet now presently believe in the existence of an infinite and eternal being, and they also make a very direct connection between this belief with ethical normative values that have a very direct impact upon the kind of day-to-day choices that they make and assist them in participating in community in a positive and assisting way. Now,
I would want to see the research on that, and I would want to see the models that were used to gather that kind of information. I'm not saying that you're lying. I'm just saying that I have a tendency to disagree with that a little bit, but we'll just agree to disagree on that point.
Well, it's much the same thing. For example, that my activities over the years in dealing with issues such as, you know, Iran-Contra, in the Pentagon Papers, and, you know, I was one of the, in addition to the other case, I was one of the five attorneys for the New York Times that ended up publishing the content of the 47 volumes of the classified Pentagon Papers. And, you know, people say to me, you know, oh, wow, you must really hate the United States. You must think they're such complete klutzes and mean.
Really, I'd say you're a patriot.
But, well, the fact that that's exactly right. And the same thing is true with regard to the spiritual traditions. If, in fact, you can really separate out the positive and the negative aspects of these major organizations and institutions, you can really begin to see that we can be very upset about the types of mistakes they make, the kind of bad faith judgments they make, et cetera. But you also need to keep in mind the positive contributions that some of these institutions and organizations make. I am a very intense critic of American foreign policy, a very intense critic of Catholic wrongdoings, of the wrongdoings of Christianity and Islam and others. But the fact of the matter is, as grown-up adults now, we need to all try to figure out how the positive aspects of various kind of institutions can be salvaged so that our generation, who has a very, very major responsibility as a major idealist generation, can figure out how to salvage the essential values from many of these institutions so as to reform and restructure these major institutions. Now, this is going to be a very significant aspect of this entire issue of trying to identify a genuinely new paradigm that we're going to be able to pass on to the members of the millennial generation.
Well, I agree with you, and I hope that you get it, but what I'm worried about is things like the larger geopolitical ramifications. If you prove the existence of ETIs, all of a sudden all this nationalism that fuels all this huge defense spending and all these little bags of tricks and this endless supply of money that they have, people are going to start questioning that. They're going to start saying, hey, we're not alone. There is only one race, the human race. Why should we be worried about borders? Why should we be trying to kill each other? I mean, it would be a nice thing to do, but I can see too many special interests and powerful special interests. And I'm talking about powerful special interests that that work in the shadows, covert organizations and things like that, really pulling out all the stops. And I can see the disinformation machine starting up already.
Well, actually, it's important to understand, Alex, that the transition that's going on right now during our lifetime, a transition up and away from the major nation-state complex that was established back in 1648 through the Treaty of Westphalia and has been kind of institutionalized in the United Nations system, is actually in transition substantially now. There's a major coming together of the European Economic Community into kind of a new large superstate. The attempt to organize the United States and Europe into a NAFTA organization, the bringing together of the G8, now including Soviet Union or the former Russia anyway, into this new group. The fact is the nation state that you're talking about is already undergoing major dissolution.
Yes,
so
the nation
the powers,
state, yes.
The powers that you're talking about, the major powers that be, have already made this decision to transition up and away from the nation state, which has historically in the 20th century been the major bulwark of the national military, national security state.
Well, they supplanted it with, instead of a nation state, now you've got in the EU, you've got the Eurocentrism, and they still have the reason to spend all the money on defense. They have combined divisions. You're seeing NAFTA.
Alex.
Gentlemen,
we need to wrap this up because we've just got a couple of minutes left.
Well, thanks for your time. I'm sorry for taking up so much.
It's okay. It was it's fascinating hearing listener participation at the level that you came in at, Alex. Thank you.
Okay, good night, gentlemen.
Good night.
See you next week.
Thank you.
Interesting discussion, Dan. Where are you thinking of holding this tribunal?
Well, the original discussion was going to be talking about holding it in Olympia, Washington, because of that being the original site where Don Keough had seen the original group of flying saucers.
Kenneth Arnold.
Kenneth Arnold, yes.
Thank you, yes.
Well, actually, the latest discussion among the people at the Premier Radio Network is to hold in Washington, D.C., to hold a major tribunal in Washington, D.C., where C-SPAN and CNN have all their major camera systems set up, to probably hold it there. So we'll probably hold it at probably 122 Maryland Avenue, right across the street from the United States Supreme Court, and right next door to the United States Capitol Building in Washington, D.C.
Well, then I'm on the other side of my life, I'm a news writer up here for a Toronto TV station, and I should tell you that in our industry would say the optics of that location would be absolutely perfect.
Yes. Yeah, that might well be true.
One of our regular contributors here is Stephen Bassett, who's a UFO lobbyist. You know, Steve. He's convinced that NASA is halfway through its disclosure program, part of a ramp-up to admission. Do you agree with that?
It's difficult to tell. Usually in the most sophisticated levels of any covert operation, there is a what's called a modified hangout position of how do you release information in a controlled manner with the right spin and directed toward the proper objective. What I'm concerned about is that following up on what Alex was saying right there at the very end of his comment, the presumption that he was exercising was that in order to maintain these massive military expenditures, they either have to have a national security state or a nation state or some medium group like the European Economic Community. The real danger that I'm concerned about in this is that if there's a dramatic move toward the establishment of a unified one-world government, the largest possible justification they could have for massive military spending is the threat of an extraterrestrial civilization to the entire planet. Then what you have is a one-world national security state, which not only siphons hundreds of billions of dollars out of the national treasuries of the entire world, but also starts to clamp down on individual civil liberties, all in the name of justifying it, having to protect us against an extraterrestrial threat. So I think that that is one of the most serious problems that we really need to investigate. And that's one of the purposes, I think, of this Rule 11 investigation, is to ascertain whether or not some type of policy like that is going on, and that as a concurrent part of that, there is some theory that they're going to undertake this kind of limited hangout position of just revealing step by step that there is such an extraterrestrial civilization, but posing it in a completely negative and threatening manner. That's what we have to be careful about.
Dan, we've run out of time. We want to be able to help you. If you would keep in touch with us, please.
Sure, we will.
So that we can pass it on to our listeners.
Absolutely, we will do that.
Presumably a website will go up with all of the details.
Absolutely, there will.
I think the dollar listener donation would be pretty damn huge.
That's the way to do it. See, $1 is are each listener now willing to spend just $1, put $1 in an envelope and send it into the radio station, they could send it into you guys now. And then you guys collect it. All you have to do is we figure out a common centralized accounting place to have it go to, and we're off and running.
Put it into escrow somewhere.
That's right. Exactly right. A special escrow account with Price Waterhouse being in charge of the accounting, and just go right straight after it.
Dan, we're out of here, I'm afraid. Thank you very much for all of your work.
My pleasure.
You very much for joining us tonight. And as things come available, as we say, keep in touch, and we will be in touch and pass
it on. It's a great privilege to get to participate in this,
guys. Listen, it's a great privilege to participate in it with you, Dan.
Well, one doesn't get a chance to speak to a true icon very often. So here's a little well done, sir, for taking the big fight.
Thank you. It's a privilege to get to do it, you guys.
Good night, Dan. Thanks
Good
a
night.
Lot.
Good, Good night, night, guys.
Our guest has been Daniel Sheehan, and that's this week's look at these strange days.
Indeed. You can email us. The address here is sdi@cfrb.com.
Our thanks to Maury Sherman of the Magical Fingers out there in the control room.
Strange Days, indeed, is copyright of and is a co-production by WT Fit and Random Record.
The executive producer, Gene Mascardelli.
The producer, across the desk, Errol Bruce Knapp.
Join us again next week. He's Michael J. Woods.
And he's Errol Bruce Knapp.
And this is CFRB 1010.
Good night.